Hey, Aaron, I finally am in touch with you after 2 months of no internet access. Well, slight internet access. How are you
Yeah, like
doing?
we've had internet, but it's slow a lot of the time, so it's hard to call people. I mean, it's funny because you and I were texting about this. Like, you don't realize how privileged you are to have like really fast internet in Toronto and in Canada in general until you leave.
Yes. So, where are you talking to me from right now?
I'm talking to you from Colombo, Sri Lanka, and it is 8 p.m. and it's boiling hot.
Okay, and over the last 2 months, where have you been so far?
Well, we started in Greece, which was more just like a stopover because we flew all the way to Tanzania, and it's a really, really long flight from Toronto to Dar es Salaam. And so we decided let's break it up with like a week stopover in Greece. So we flew to Athens, and we spent several days in Athens, and then we went to Meteora, and then back to Athens to catch our flight south to Dar es Salaam. And then we hung out on Zanzibar in Tanzania. We went on safari out of Arusha. Then we hung out in Arusha. We went to Moshi. And then I think we were in Tanzania for like 3.5, 4 weeks. And then we flew to Sri Lanka, which is where we've been for the last almost 30 days. We're about to leave.
You are on your way to Nepal, right?
Yes, next
Okay.
is Nepal.
I mean, I have so many questions for you about safari because it looks you went on two, right?
We did a safari here in Sri Lanka. And you know what? People told me this. They were like, you've done safari in one of the best places in the world, so it probably won't hit the same. It didn't hit the same in Sri Lanka. It was still fun, but you just can't beat going on safari in Tanzania. It was just like such a mind-blowing experience.
What was the difference, would you say?
I think the difference is it's much harder to, even I felt like I did a lot of research, but I just didn't conceptualize how difficult and how far it is to get to the Serengeti and Ngorongoro Crater, like all these parks that you go to in Tanzania. They're not easy to get to. It's like a lot of overlanding and off-roading and like difficult roads. So you just feel like you've really earned it by the time you get there. And the wildlife was just unbelievable. Like in Sri Lanka, you do see a lot of wildlife, but it's mostly Asian elephants and a couple other things. Like we saw crocodiles. There are cats, but we didn't see any. They're just harder to spot here. Whereas in Tanzania, like you just see so much. It's just, we would be driving and you would just like look out over this plain and just see like four different types of animals, like all together, just like running through the plains. It was just mind-blowing.
Oh,
It really was.
I also have to like, because I don't think you've posted about this on social media, but we have to talk about it on the podcast. Tell me about what happened to your sandals on safari.
I know I have talked about this a lot on social media because it's really funny. So I think the funniest thing about this is that like we camp in Canada, like we're not, I wouldn't say that we're like super experienced campers, but we know enough to like not leave things outside your tent. Like we were really good about food and all that stuff. And literally one night before bed, I think it was just the exhaustion because you get really exhausted on safari. It's just like a lot of driving and difficult driving. So I was so exhausted and we get to the tent and it's been raining. So I was like, I turned to Luke. I was like, it's probably fine I leave these out here, right? And he was like, yeah. And I got into the tent and I did think to myself, like, I don't know about that. And then I just promptly went to sleep. And the next morning, every day we were up like before sunrise. So it's dark. Luke's up before me. He gets back into the tent and I'm like sort of slowly waking up. And he just looks at me and he's like, I have bad news. And I was like, what? And he's like, your sandals. And I was like, no. And I literally didn't believe him. The conversation went on for like 10 minutes because I truly, because he messes with me a lot. So I was like, you're kidding. He was like, no, like an animal ate them. They've been eaten. And I just fully did not believe him until I got out of the tent and found them like a
Just
few feet away.
mangled.
Yeah. And I'm not going to lie, initially, I was really upset.
Those were your nice Tevas. But then I started to
see the humor in it. Yeah, and they're like pretty new. But I started to see the humor in it when I brought them to, so the lead guide on our trip, Moses, he's awesome. If you do this trip with G Adventures, ask to go with Moses because he was the best. I brought them over to him and showed him, and he just like burst out laughing, like laughing uncontrollably, and was like, yeah, a hyena ate those.
And like, didn't you have suspicions that it was a hyena too? Because I think you messaged me, you were like, I can literally hear hyenas like outside my tent or something. Oh, yeah.
Like you do. You hear them in the night. They come right up to your tents and they won't come inside. And like, they assured us, they were like, hyenas are scavengers. They're not like aggressive towards really anyone. Like, they're just out there looking for easy meals. And that's what my sandals were, I guess.
And then you went through like a whole ordeal to try and get them fixed too, which like I was honestly surprised that you were just like going to great lengths to get them fixed. I feel like I probably would have just ended up buying new sandals.
This is the thing, and this is what I love about like traveling in other countries. You realize how the culture in other places is not to immediately throw something away, because you can always find someone with the skills to fix it. Like, if we were in Toronto and like a bear ate my sandals, I would have thrown them away. Like, I wouldn't be able to find someone in Toronto that could fix them. But I knew that in Tanzania, like, this would be possible, because you see all like on the streets everywhere, there's people that are working on shoes. So it was just a matter of finding someone in a market who had the right materials to fix them. So it took a couple tries, but we did find a guy and he fixed them. And it was really cute because he didn't speak any English. And I just like sort of communicated by showing him photos of like what I wanted done to them. And then when we went to pick them up, because he was like, come back in 3 hours. So we go back in 3 hours and still can't communicate with him. So I used Google Translate to show someone else what had happened. Like, I explained, we were in the Serengeti and a hyena ate the straps. And that guy explained it to the shoe guy. And it was just a really cute moment, because there was like a whole crowd of people and everyone was just laughing about this story.
It's so good. It's so funny.
It was funny too in Tanzania, because everyone knows this about hyenas. So like, whenever we were in the car, like, we would hire guides a lot who would take us places, and we would always tell them, and they would just laugh their heads off. Like, everyone we told just thought it was so funny.
Okay, I know you also have stories for me about where you've been recently, but I also, before we get to that, I also have to ask you about like how your body is doing, because I know you've had a couple of mishaps so far. Your toenail is in the process of falling off and your face exploded. So like, how you doing? What's going on with you?
Honestly, Luke and I are just still really impressed that we haven't had food poisoning. And
I'm
everyone
impressed.
We talk to is like, we don't know how you haven't had food. Everyone we met in Tanzania had some form of food poisoning, and we just cruised through it, like, no problems. And honestly, we've mostly cruised through Sri Lanka too. And like, you know, we don't shy away. Like, we eat street food. We're not that careful. I brushed my teeth with sink water.
And so far, so good.
Listen, I think what it is that we took Dukoral, which is a oral vaccine you can take that helps protect you, but it runs out after 3 months. So okay. Talk to me in a month, because
okay.
We have 1 month left of Dukoral protection.
The countdown begins.
Also, I told Lucas, like, last time I was in Nepal, I had really bad diarrhea, like really bad, like I shit my pants on a bus diarrhea. So I'm just preparing myself for that.
Prepare your butt. Just wait. Okay, but I have to ask, because I feel like your toe was damaged like on day one of your trip. Was this pre-trip?
No, this was actually like, I think it got damaged when we went to a wedding right before we left.
Okay.
On the trip. I actually like, I don't know how my toe got like that. I just looked at it one day and it was like that.
Please describe it for our listeners.
So my big toe on my left foot, half the nail, actually it's creeping, it's getting bigger. Half the nail is just like black. And it's been like that since around December 15th.
The fact that you've been like trekking on it tells me that like it's not going anywhere anytime soon.
Honestly, I really thought it was going to be off by now. Like when we were surfing, I was like, for sure, I'm just going to come out of the ocean. It's going to be gone. But it's still hanging on. So I don't know.
And then your face also has had a giant rash on it for the last like week. What happened there?
I don't know. I just woke up one morning and I looked at Luke and he looked at me and
he was like, whoa.
It's funny because like this is so like people who backpack know I woke up and like my eyes were crusted over. My face was like on fire. Looked in the mirror like and Luke was like, yeah, that doesn't look very good. It's 4:30 a.m. And we're like, well, let's just go do this hike and then we'll figure it out. The weird thing about it is like it's a zigzag. It's this like weird zigzag across my face. And that's because the homestay host, she was like, it could have been a caterpillar. Because the caterpillars here, if they crawl over you, you get a rash. And you know what? This is what I get because it was the one night I didn't put my mosquito net down, which is a rookie move. So this is what happens.
Get a caterpillar.
So listen, everyone. Use your mosquito nets.
Ape Budun Eran Patula Wang Siripa Muni Siripa Padukia Nalala Taba.
I just thought it'd be fun to share this thing that Luke and I did, which I think is like a bit lesser done by tourists. Like we didn't meet anyone who had done this. But we had come across it just reading about the region that we were in, which is in central Sri Lanka. There's a mountain that's called, in English, it's called Adam's Peak, but in Sinhalese, it's called Sripada. And the name of the mountain roughly translates to the sacred foot because at the very top of the mountain, there's a footprint-shaped mark. And it's believed by Buddhists to be that of the Buddha. And so we had heard about this and we had heard that it's one of the most famous pilgrimage routes in Sri Lanka. Basically, like every person you meet in Sri Lanka has climbed this mountain to pray in the temple at the top and to see the footprint. And we were in Nuwara Eliya, which is a really beautiful, like small city that's really up in the mountains, like surrounded by tea fields. And we were staying in this wonderful homestay, and our homestay host, Ara, we asked him about Adam's Peak, and he was like, oh yeah, like I've climbed it 7 times. And we were like, how hard is it? And he's like, it's hard, but like you could probably do it. And we were like, okay. And he was like, I'll drive you. Like, I'll take you to do it. And we were like, okay. Obviously, we paid him, but we were like, okay, like, you're making this really easy.
Yeah,
let's
you can't
do
say
it.
No.
Yeah. And what we learned about it is that, like, tourists do climb it, but it's more popular to climb it in the off season. So for Sri Lankans, the like, high season for climbing Sripada is between, I think it's, like, December to May-ish. I actually don't know why. I think it has to do with the weather. And then during all the other months, it's mostly foreigners that are climbing it. And I'm going to come back to this point because it's relevant later.
Okay.
That it's the on season. So we didn't realize how busy it would be. Like we've never done a pilgrimage. Like I've heard about many pilgrimage routes that people do, like, especially in Europe, but I just like didn't really know what it was going to be like. So actually let me set the stage. So Most people climb Shripada with the goal to get there at sunrise. So we said, okay, yeah, let's do that. And it's mostly because it's just so hot during the day. It would just kill you to try to climb this mountain in the middle of the day. So we left Nuora Eliya, I think around 11 p.m., 11 or 12 p.m., like in the night. And then we started climbing around 1:30 a.m. And it was really cute. Ara, like, took us from the car, like, brought us to the start, and then gave us both a big hug and just looked at us and was like, good luck.
Oh, my God.
And we were like, that's a little ominous. So it's 5,500 steps up. We started at 1:30 a.m. Ara told us it would probably take, like, around 3 hours to get all the way up. Ara's mom packed us a breakfast, which was really nice. So we had our breakfast. I had my knee brace on. We were like, let's do this.
That's key.
And honestly, like, it was hard, but because there's so many people, like, this is what we didn't realize about it, right? We thought, like, oh, we'll see a couple people, but there were just, like, hundreds of people climbing up. And it's mostly, like, paved and staircase all the way up. So it felt like we were, like, really part of something, like, just smiling at people. The energy was, like, quite vibrant. And all the way up, there's food vendors, like, you can buy corn, you can buy, like, people are literally cooking fresh food, like string hoppers. So all the way up, we would just, like, hike a little bit until we were exhausted and then pull off to the side and, like, sit with people and drink tea and eat snacks. And it was, like, quite festive. And there's, like, at some spots, there was music playing. And then the actual climbing, like, is brutal. You're just dying the whole time because it's just straight stairs, like, straight up. And that was what, like, that's what makes you feel like you're part of something, because you're just, like, on these stairs looking to your left, looking to your right, and just everyone's in the same boat. Like, everyone is just going through it. And, I mean, there weren't, like, very many other foreigners. It was mostly Sri Lankans. And we were just, like, amazed by the fact that, like, a lot of Sri Lankans do it barefooted, because it is a temple at the top, and in Sri Lanka, and, like, for Buddhist temples in general, you don't wear your shoes when you go inside. So a lot of people just climb it, like, completely barefooted. We saw, like, elderly grannies and grandpas climbing up, and, like, whole families just, like, supporting their elderly as they slowly made their way up. You saw, like, families where, like, dads were, like, holding their children, like, sleeping babies. People are carrying, like, alms and, like, gifts and offerings to bring up. And just, like, seeing that, Luke and I were like, this is just, like, a little trek for us. Like, for these people, this is a really meaningful thing that they're willing to do, even, like, when they're in their older age or when they're carrying their children with them. So, yeah, we started climbing at 1:30, and then we got, I think it was, like, around 4 a.m. that... So, like, the higher you go, the more slender the staircase becomes. So it started getting, like, extremely crowded until we were eventually at, like, a complete standstill. Like, couldn't move, couldn't go up, couldn't go down. We were just, like, stuck in the standstill. And we were so close to the summit, like, 100 meters from the summit, like, so, so close. And we just didn't move for, like, 2 hours, and we couldn't figure out what was going on. And finally, like, finally we started talking to people around us, and they said, yeah, it's just, like, too much congestion. Like, too many people want to be up at the temple at sunrise. So there was just literally no space on the summit. So we watched the sunrise from where we were, which was still really, really beautiful. And then people started coming down eventually. And it's, like, quite orderly when you get to that point, because there's like, a bar that separates, like, the way up versus the way down. So they keep traffic to the right. But so we could see people coming down, and eventually we started asking people that were coming down, and they were like, you'll be waiting for hours. You'll just be here for hours waiting to go up. And so at that point we were like, we are not Buddhists. Let's, like, remove ourselves so that hopefully the people, like, two people behind us will get there a little faster. So that's what we decided to do. And then we got to the bottom, and Ara picked us up, and we drove home, and his mom made tea for us the second we got in, which was really nice.
That is so nice.
They were just the sweetest family.
Aww.
But yeah, overall, really, really awesome experience. Like, we were so glad that we did it. Like, not going to lie, we were a bit disappointed that we didn't make it to the top, but we just felt that the whole experience and like seeing what this pilgrimage is like was just, it's not something we expected to do in Sri Lanka, which I think is why we just loved it so much.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it sounds like such an awesome experience. Even if you didn't make it to the top, like just being surrounded by all of those people that it's like super meaningful for, like, mm-hmm. It's just a very unique experience, I think. That sounds really, really awesome.
Well, there are easier hikes you can do in Sri Lanka, but if you want a cool experience, definitely do Shripada. It's worth it.
So what have you been eating these days?
Oh, like so much good food. I'm happy to report that in Sri Lanka, people are very willing to discuss allergies, which is really nice. I think like because a lot of people speak English here, like it really helps. So I've actually just had such an amazing time because people have been so like kind with my allergies and willing to like walk me through things. So I've eaten so much like Sri Lankan food, which often like isn't the case for me because I'm just too nervous to test the waters. So I've been eating a lot of curries and string hoppers. They're like a noodle that's made typically for breakfast. You can eat it with curry. I think some people might just eat it like straight up. But yeah, it's mostly curries. Like we've eaten tons of curries. And it's really interesting, like the curries change depending on where you are in the country. Because like it depends on what's grown, right? So like when we were in the mountains, we would have like a lot of potato curry and we had like eggplant curry, which you can't really get in the south because it doesn't grow there. So it's been like cool to see how the curry culture, I guess, changes depending on where you are in the country and what's grown there.
Mm. Okay, I looked up string hoppers. They look like vermicelli noodles.
Yeah, yeah, they do. And they come like sort of like in a ball.
Yeah,
kind of.
Yeah.
Oh, and my favorite is like they use coconut a lot in cooking here. So I've had a lot of coconut roti. This is my favorite breakfast, like a coconut roti, and then you throw all this dal on it, and it's so good.
I'm just over here in Brantford eating, you know, potatoes.
I'm not going to lie. Listen, we're 2 months into this, and like mostly our diet has been like meat and rice.
Yeah.
And fruit. And I do have moments where I'm like, I would just love to crush a plate of nachos. I would just love that.
And what's on the docket for Nepal?
Well, we're going to start with a week in Kathmandu because it's an amazing city. And so we just thought, let's just like really spend like a solid week there to get a feel for it. And then we are headed to Pokhara to do a trek in the Annapurna range. So we've been connected with a guide through Taryn from Happiest Outdoors, who we had on the show pretty recently, actually. She connected me with the guide that she had, and he's awesome. He invited us to like stay in his home with his family before we start the trek.
Oh, amazing.
So we're excited for that. And then after that, we're just gonna like bop around to a couple different like places around Nepal after the trek.
Amazing. Have all of the momos?
Yes, we're going to do a momo cooking class. I'm so excited
no,
for it.
Oh my God, I'm so jealous.
Yeah, so I'll do the class and then when I get home, we'll make momos together.
Yes, please. We've already done dumplings before. We can do momos for sure.
There's one other thing we have to discuss though.
Yes.
Dune 2.
Oh.
And this has been like a high stress thing for me because I have to see it. And I was really concerned that we would be somewhere that I would not be able to see it. This is part of, now the truth comes out. This is why we're spending a week in Kathmandu, because I was like, we need to make sure we see it when we're in Kathmandu.
Yes.
So I turned to Reddit. I found the Nepalese subreddit. I asked in there and everyone was super helpful. So we know where to go.
Amazing.
And we're going to see it.
I'm so excited for you.
Yep.
Are you going to watch the first movie though, just to like have a little recap? Because I highly recommend you should.
Yeah, I might do that. Is it on Netflix?
It's definitely on some sort of platform.
It's just been really hard with the Wi-Fi situation.
Yeah.
And a lot of these streaming apps don't let you stream from abroad. Sometimes it works if I have VPN on, but
I wonder if you can find any like movie rental stores in Nepal.
But then how would I play it?
Well, where are you staying at a place that might have like a DVD player? I'm just throwing out options, you know? Just throwing out options.
It's a good, I could ask. I haven't seen any.
Or you should also check if that theater that you're going to is going to be doing a double bill or is going to be playing Dune 1 at some point.
Well, here's the thing. Now I'm realizing I could ask in the hostel because maybe the hostel will have a TV.
Oh, for sure it will. I feel like it definitely will. Yeah. Just organize a Dune viewing with everybody at the hostel.
Listen, Luke and I already talked about this. We were like, should we just like get a little bus together of like all the people in the hostel going to see Dune 2 together?
100%.
And we were like, we'll dress up. And Luke was like, I'll be Timothy and you can be a sandworm.
Cool. Well, I'm excited for you.
This is the thing. I don't know if I'm going to get IMAX. I don't know if it's going to be IMAX.
You'll take what you can get at this point, you know?
Yeah. Yep, yep.
Okay, well, I feel like that's it.
Yeah.
You're on your way to the next country. Stay safe. I'm very excited for everything that's to come, and we'll probably talk in another month because you probably won't have internet access for a little while.
As soon as I do, I will let you know.